Good evening, James McKenna here with my Science Hour for August 4th, 2022, in the ongoing series, year-long series of history of my discoveries. And once again, I want to make it clear that this is not about the details of my science work. It's about the history of discoveries, putting them into perspective in the timeline and telling people what was going on, the different events in the world that were going on at the time. And last week, I talked a bit about Mark Hazelwood, so I just wanted to recap that. Mark's book, Blindsided, came out in, I think it was like the late 1990s. At any rate, he went on Art Bell. Like I say, he was a shoe-in, so to speak, with Art, because Art's favorite songwriter was Lee Hazelwood, Mark's dad. And Mark had written this book and had an interest in this topic on Planet X. And it kind of blew the whole thing wide open, because the CIA had its own designated plan of publications, of books, of characters, etc. And Mark kind of came out of nowhere. And if he were just somebody else, he probably would not have gotten the notoriety that he got if he were not Lee Hazelwood's son. You know, and it's just because of Art's fascination with the music of Lee Hazelwood from Hollywood. And Lee Hazelwood wrote most of Nancy Sinatra's songs, which was Art's favorite singer. And so at any rate, for that combination, it's just like blew this thing sky high, but it totally wrecked the CIA disinformation campaign, because now somebody completely out of nowhere comes out and for these other reasons just becomes immensely famous in bringing up a lot of issues about this topic. And so then Mark, of course, was not familiar with my work at the time when he wrote the book. So he got a real education when he talked to me. But the point is that then I came out with my book, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, shortly thereafter, and that was a book that really sold. I was, of course, self-published. It was published under the jmcanneyscience.com press logo, label. And the printing, we were having a hard time keeping up with the printing of this book, because it was going out in cases to people. And I had one incident. This woman in Texas bought a case, and she started selling it and never bought another case. And so it turned out she was printing the book. She took my book, copied it, printed it, and was selling the printed copies. So that took a little bit of undoing to get to stop that little process there. But anyway, a lot of people were selling it. And then I decided that selling a book wholesale was not a good business proposition, for the simple reason that the most of the money was made by the person selling it retail. And I usually just had enough money to reprint the book, and there was no profit. So I said, okay, this cannot continue. So I set up my own page to sell my books on my own webpage, and that's how it's been ever since, except, of course, you get the Amazon, the Scamazon, printing people's books and then selling them on Scamazon. And pretending that they're used books when they're really not. They're being printed by Amazon's press. But anyway, ever since, I've just sold my own books on my own website. And of course, there's all kinds of pirating that goes on the internet, which is, you know, to destroy the private author, basically. Okay, so anyway, back to the relation of the books from Mark Hazelwood and my book, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes. Mark's the tsunami wave that he created with his book, Blindsided. My book just got on that wave and expanded. And so it was also coming in right in the face of the CIA, where the first thing I say in the book is that, hey, comets are not dirty snowballs, that Planet X is not going to look like this big ball in the sky. It's going to look like a comet. Here we have Hale-Bopp that's up in the sky at this time, still up in the sky, visible to the naked eye, becoming a planet. I have on my webpage welcome Hale-Bopp, newest planetary member of our solar system. And it flies right in the face of everything that the CIA is doing with their disinformation program. And I'm on a lot of radio shows. And Mark, it's interesting because once he got famous, he was on all these different radio shows. And I was also following and on a lot of these radio shows also, sometimes at the same time. And then, like I say, the 2002 Global Wings Conference, where Mark was a presenter. I was supposed to be a presenter, but I turned it down and ended up, by happenstance, being very near Denver the week of the conference, and called up Mark, and he said, I'll give you an hour of my spot. So I go to the conference. I talked about that last week. But the main point I want to make here is that that was one event that really accelerated this whole idea of Planet X and alternative explanations from what the CIA disinformation program. And remember that the CIA disinformation program was set up in the early 90s, and as soon as Hale-Bopp, the nucleus, which was literally Planet X that Robert Harrington had discovered, as soon as that became a giant comet, that's when this other disinformation campaign was made public. And this came out of a group. And this is, by the way, why all of the trolls on the internet during that time were software programmers, because this came out of a group where they had, it was called Promise Software. It was a group in Los Angeles, headed in Los Angeles. And the people who owned that, and I'm not going to mention names here. This is going to get down in the mud. I've talked about these before. But very much involved in the CIA and very much involved in taking down Art Bell. Skywatch was an international organization that the CIA used, had front offices all over the world in case somebody had a UFO or some kind of alien encounter. The idea was to get them there to these Skywatch offices right away. And the same with MUFON, which was tremendously infiltrated, the Mutual UFO Network, which is also a volunteer organization, but highly infiltrated, to screen and have all these people running around looking for UFOs, etc. But out of this, you know, there could be something real. And so all of this is going on and related to this Promise Software, which was being, which had competition with the Heaven's Gate people who were actually writing good software. And anyway, out of this group that was writing the Promise Software came the disinformation programs and the characters that were public. The crazy lady talks the alien was married to the guy who was part of this whole Promise Software program, programmers out in Los Angeles. Okay, so anyway, so Mark Hazelwood's book blows these things out of the water, brings in a totally different aspect. And then, of course, my book comes in, and it just totally, and then I start analyzing the disinformation and am right in the face of this saying, no, there's nothing going to happen on May 15, 2003. We're not all going to die. There is no Planet X related to that. And then, of course, I'm realizing that this Hale-Bopp thing is what Harrington discovered, because I was, of course, knowledgeable about that because NASA had an open contract on it back in the early 90s with the Naval Observatory and Robert Harrington. Okay, so anyway, and then, of course, I was on the Art Bell show throughout the late 90s and on the air saying that, no, Hale-Bopp did have a companion, and it was well known, and the astronomers knew it, etc. And at the Canary Island Conference on Hale-Bopp, the first item on the agenda was the companion of Hale-Bopp. So all of these astronomers knew it. They blackballed Art Bell with a lie, knowing full well it was a lie, for the public press. And that still stands today. And you can go to the agenda for the Canary Islands Conference on Hale-Bopp and see that the very first thing on the agenda is the companion. So anyway, what a bunch of corrupt scientists. That's all you can say about these people. Hal Weaver, Ali Hainau at the University of Hawaii, And the list goes on and on. And by the way, I mentioned Gene Schumacher. I don't think I completed the story on him. And this is back also in the 90s where he had discovered what was his comet, Schumacher-Levy 9. It was the one that crashed into Jupiter. But he was always also, he had his observatory in Australia, which is down under, down south, and had a good view out there with his private observatory of Planet X. And he was keeping track of this object that Harrington had been tracking. So he had data on that. So one night, his observatory burns down, which is absurd. How do you burn down an observatory in the middle of Australia? It's, you know, and they destroyed all his work relative to Planet X. It shows you the level of them trying to keep this secret. And then I think Gene Schumacher was going to go public, just like Robert Harrington was going to go public with this information that this object was coming in. It was big. It had a companion. That companion is orbiting it. And this thing is coming within a million miles of Earth, going to cause some serious problems on Earth. And Harrington dies, and then Gene Schumacher dies in a car crash that doesn't make any sense at all out in the middle of the desert. Gene Schumacher was studying this crater that's out, asteroid-caused crater out in the middle of Australia, the outback. And the first story that came in when I heard about this, I turned on the news and they said Gene Schumacher rolled his Jeep while driving around down in the bottom of this crater. Well, that's absurd. He's a very conservative person. He's not going to be doing wheelies in a Jeep down in the base of this crater out in the middle of Australia, you know, or doing, and his wife was in the car with him. And so anyway, that story didn't pan out. So then they said that as he was up on the top, out of the crater, there's a road that comes into the crater and that meets a main road, which is just an outback road. It's in the middle of nowhere in the out in the Australian outback. And it said an oil tanker truck hit him and killed him as he was turning onto the road. Well, that's absolutely bizarre. It doesn't make any sense at all, because these big cross-country big trailers throw up a lot of dust. You can see these things coming from 10 miles away. You see the dust cloud. And so, you know, being hit by turning out in front of one of these on a highway where there's nobody else doesn't make any sense at all either. Then the story changed, and it said that he had died from an accident, and he was en route to the hospital, and he died in the ambulance. That's the final story that came out, and apparently that sticks. But at any rate, Gene Schumacher had data on Planet X, the object that Harrington had studied, and by this time it had been moving in, so Gene Schumacher must have had a boatload of data on this, about the orbital period of the companion. He knew the mass of it, he knew it was big, he knew its orbit was on a near collision course with Earth, and he was going to go public. And that's when he died. Okay, so make your own decisions, but at any rate, so clearly the CIA is very active trying to contain this message. So in the early 2000s, you have Clay Douglas, you have Alex Merklinger, and I could go through a laundry list of a dozen more talk show hosts at that time who were active and very popular, very big radio shows. And I was on these. I was talking with I'm not going to name other guests I was on shows with, but continually talking about this. And by the way, that's where the chemtrail, all of the issues on chemtrail started, was in that time frame in the early 2000s. That's when the manipulation of hurricanes started. And I would be on radio shows talking about that. And, of course, the whole Planet X issue. But at any rate, what the CIA did is they would go in and they targeted Art Bell. They gave him problem after problem after problem until they finally just broke him financially and forced him out of his radio show. And then, of course, Clear Channel came in and bought the what is today the Coast to Coast AM radio show. But all of these other people, like Alex Merklinger, Clay Douglas, etc., had big, big conservative radio shows. And the CIA went into these people, and they came to me, too. And basically, they said, look, your show is big, but we're going to make it really big. We're going to set you up with all these sponsors. We're going to give you a big studio. We're going to, you know, you're going to become big. And I thought, you know, this sounds too good to be true. So I'm just not going to do it. I've always worked alone. I've always paid for my own radio time. I have no sponsors. I don't have commercials. I don't make contracts with people. I just work alone. That's the way I've always done things. That's the way I'm going to work, etc. And I today, that's the way I am. I pay for my own radio show time, my air time. I've done this since the beginning of my show over 22 years ago. I don't have sponsors. I don't make associations with people, etc., etc. And so, and it's, you know, it's my show is relatively small, but it's still here. But all of these people went under. And what they do is they get in, they make them sign all these paperwork, get all this money flowing and all of this investment going on. Then they come in and they say, look, now you're going to say what we want you to say on your radio show. And at that point, they're stuck. And a lot of these people ended up in court with all kinds of bad things happening to them. Some of them died. Some of them got sick because of the complete destruction of their lives that was going on. And none of them are here today. I shouldn't say none, because there are still some people out of that group that are still here who weathered that storm. But at any rate, be that as it may, I went through there in that time period of the complete destruction of all these private talk show radio hosts. I watched this happen. I watched them one by one collapsing and ending up in court with all kinds of problems. The next thing I want to talk about is the various disinformation campaigns that were raging through the early 2000s and beyond. The first one, of course, well, the Planet X thing, of course, in the late 1990s, started in 1995. Crazy Lady Talks to Aliens, We're All Gonna Die, May 15, 2003. That was huge. But then there was the 2000 Millennium Bug. The Millennium Bug was allegedly... Now, mind you, I am a computer expert. I've designed computers. I know how they work inside and out. I've designed language sets and instruction sets and chips. I've designed encryption codes and firewalls for private networks. I've designed hardware. I've been in charge of software developments that go with the hardware at a high level, and on and on. So I know about computers. So the Millennium Bug thing... Here's what it was saying, that all of the Microsoft computers, because of the millennium, you would hit all of these zeros in the computer, and they would all die. They wouldn't be able to recycle, etc. And it's just a myth. It was just a complete myth, because computer registers cycle over all the time. They're limited space. And so they count up to a certain amount, and then they become all zeros, and then they recycle. And this is part of operating a computer, is understanding what the limits are of your registers, of your memory, etc. And so there was nothing ever that was going to happen. And so anyway, I happened to be, by the way, working in a telecommunications company in the year 2000, and we were all required to work. On New Year's Eve 2000, instead of going out and partying and having a good time and celebrating the millennium, a thousand-year New Year, only comes around every 1,000 years, so it was a big deal. And everybody had to be there. And so all of the businesses, etc., out there were advised to shut down their routers, shut down their computer systems, shut everything down, and then bring it up the next day. And I knew that there was nothing ever going to happen. Computers are meant to do this all the time. They're designed to. But this millennium thing was a tremendous disinformation campaign. And it started the sale, by the way, of water filters. The people in the water filter business at this time, they were the gravity on the counter, gravity water filters. And there were at that time just a few brands, of which I started selling a few after that. My show started right after the 2000 Millennium Bug thing occurred. And so I started selling water filters as part of a program with the radio station. And then I eventually got my own water filter line and had my own manufacturing. And now I have my own manufacturing and water filter line, etc. And so, and that's, by the way, how I pay for my airtime, etc., for this show, for the web page, and all the other expenses that go on behind the scene, because you buy my water filters. And you can buy my books and CDs and libraries, etc., on my jmccsci.com page. The water filter page is a separate page, jmccwaterfilters.com. And that company, JMCC Water Filters, has been in business since the year 2000. So anyway, that's just a little bit about how this all began and how I got a radio show. And I remember at the beginning I had a person who I would actually call up and they would record while I was doing the live radio show. That was my setup. And so anyway, everything has evolved since then technically. But that was the first big, big disinformation campaign. And by the way, it got preppers going. That's where preppers started, in that 2000 range, the millennium bug, get ready because the whole world, the computers are going to come down, we're all going to die, you know, type of mentality. And so it really egged on people to become prepared, whereas they wouldn't have either. And really, in that sense, it backfired on the CIA, who was trying to get everybody to not be preppers, to be completely dependent on the government. Okay, so then in 2003, May 15th, we have I've talked about this many times, crazy lady talks to aliens, we're all going to die, with the big red full moon that's coming up over the horizon that night. Then there's the 2012 end of the Mayan calendar bogus thing. Remember that? And that brought a lot of crazies out of the woodwork. And then there was the association of the Colbrun. Now, if you remember, if you look online, if you look at the Colbrun writing, it puts my name there and it says James McCanney introduced the Colbrun to the Western world in his book Atlantis to Tesla, The Colbrun Connection. And I'll talk about that just in a minute, as that was released on the Coast to Coast AM show. The Colbrun was almost immediately taken over by the CIA and disinformation groups, and called it the people came out saying they wrote the Colbrun, and they started mixing it in with Mayan calendar and Planet X and the kitchen sink and everything else. And the whole idea was to take the Colbrun, which was really a collection of books from the Library of Joseph of Arimathea, which had been obfuscated, had been held in secret for a couple thousand years, since the abbey in Glastonbury had been burned down in around the year 1100 by the Romans. The Romans finally got in there and destroyed, but a lot of those books were preserved and finally made it into our lives through the Colbrun. And I've talked about this, how the Colbrun, after it was put into its current form, in the big hardbound book, there were three copies that came into the USA. One was with a guy named Dick, who was running a study group, and his friend Bill, my friend, who went out searching for this and found it, and then they got one copy to me. Okay, so at any rate, and what happened is I had another copy. And a friend sent it to somebody, and that's where the disinformation campaign came from, because they started Xerox copying it literally and selling it online, and then they republished it, and then the CIA got a hold of it, and that's the one that you're going to find on Amazon still there today selling. And other bookstores will not sell it because they know it's a plagiarized copy. And then they throw in Planet X and the kitchen sink and just really destroy the entire, cleanliness of the Colburn, which is really a good book. And I want to mention also that I think I've mentioned this before in talking about the Colburn. There's a woman today that has been doing excellent, excellent work regarding the Colburn. Her name is Yvonne Whiteman from the United Kingdom, and she has books that are now on Amazon. It's a compendium of studies she has done from the Colburn, relating them to historical events. It's excellent, excellent work. So there are people who tried to destroy it, and there's people who are doing a very good job of illuminating the very important parts of the Colburn. Okay, so at any rate, 2012, the end of the Mayan calendar, craziness, and of course, that was raging because every week Planet X is going to be here, we're all going to die. Constantly, every week there'd be some new goofy guy, oh, I've been studying Planet X for 30 years, and this week it's going to be here. On and on and on. Just absolute insanity. And by the way, that is continuing today. There's still people out there that are going in 3,600-year orbit and Planet X and, you know, it's coming next week and just garbage, you know, and there are people still out there pumping this, you know, this theme that is totally incorrect. And if somebody says it's a 3,600-year orbit, you know, number one, they got it off the internet, and number two, they don't know what they're talking about, and number three, they're fake. So anyway, and that continues today. It's going on. I hear about it all the time, and people send me, oh, here's a picture of an object next to the sun. It's Planet X. Oh, my goodness. And this, you know, unfortunately, the American public and the world public are very scientifically inept, and they've been kept this way through public education, and which carries down into private education relative to, you know, events and history and just the destruction of real history. In fact, people will ask me why I go on certain radio shows because, you know, there's a lot of disinformation on radio shows. They cover all these different topics, many of which I don't agree with, but I call it swimming with the sharks. When I'm on a radio show, I make sure that I'm talking about my topic and that I have the airwaves. During that time, I'm talking, okay, when I get off there, I cannot control that talk show host or what their topics are or if they're disagreeing or if they're bringing other topics. For example, I tell people specifically that there's no question that Atlantis was in the South China Sea, what we now know as the South China Sea. And it's a very active electrical area, atmospheric electricity, etc. But I tell them that is where Atlantis is, and the main five-ring continent, and it's now just under the water a little ways, and it's been excavated by the U.S. Navy. So anyway, there's no question about that, but people will still come up and, oh, it's in the middle of the Atlantic, and there's this thing, somebody has a picture of something under the water in the Mediterranean, oh, there's Atlantis, and no. You know, so there's constant misinformation being pelted at the public, constant, on these topics. And they ask me, why am I on these radio shows? And like I say, I call it swimming with the sharks. It's just you know, being out there in the public, you're going to be confronted with tremendous amounts of misinformation. And by the way, I have to say too that a lot of the old trolls must have retired and they're out golfing someplace now. And you find that they are people with no accomplishments in their life. Some are even astronomers. But they have no publications in peer-reviewed journals. They have no scientific achievements. They've never worked as a professional astronomer, other than maybe teaching at a community college or something like that. But they have no real scientific accomplishments. And so these are just trolls. They're called outreach people. There's other names for them. And their job is to make sure that the standard party line, the homogenized, blended, pasteurized information is passed on to the public and defend the NASA party line at all costs. And along this same vein, as far as disinformation, I want to mention a guy named Stephen Hawking. Now, Stephen Hawking, in his very last book, on the very last page of his very last book, talks about the divine creator. And he said, as human beings, this is paraphrasing, but he says, as human beings, we would be elevated to greatness if we only discover one physical process of the workings of the universe. Basically, that this is an immense, complex universe that we live in, that we are just discovering how it works. And if you can, through your lifetime, just discover one process. And of course, he had done work at the Big Bang and the, you know, the other aspects of cosmology. And then now they claim that he was an atheist. Well, those statements say very specifically that he's not an atheist, because an atheist is somebody that thinks that there's no God, there's no creator. This just all happened out of happenstance, out of a, you know, that's why the Big Bang is so convenient, because it gives atheists an excuse for how the whole universe began all by itself without any rhyme or reason or design or creation. And so Stephen Hawking was very much not an atheist, and that's his statements in the last book that he personally wrote. And then they got a guy that comes along, and he's very debilitated. And frankly, the disease that he had was very debilitating. I saw him, I was at a conference where he was up on the stage, and he was in his wheelchair, and this was way back, I don't even remember, but it was very early, and he was, you know, had this severe debilitating disease, and he could only talk by moving a joystick. That was the point he was at. And the people that have that don't live long. So I suspect he died long, long time ago, long before the official death that they gave. But supposedly there was a guy, and only he could talk to Stephen Hawking, and they wrote books, entire books, twisting everything Stephen Hawking had done into this atheist platform. Also, a guy named Albert Einstein was claimed to be an atheist. Albert Einstein was not an atheist. He was just not a person that went to an organized church. And that's the misconception here with a lot of people, that if you don't belong to some kind of organized religion, then you must be an atheist. Well, that's not true, because their statements are very specific in the understanding that we are just, as human beings, able to discover these few facts and few theories on how the universe might work. But we're just discovering what's already here long before we were born, long before the parents were born, before your grandparents were born, before your, you know, the human race was here on planet Earth, long before planet Earth even. There was a universe, and it was active, and it was had rules in physics, etc. And we're just discovering some of these, and we may not have it right today. We're always working towards a better understanding of the design. And so the people that understand that intrinsically are not atheists. They are people who understand we're just beginning to understand how the universe works. But my point in talking about both of these people is that they want to pretend that Albert Einstein did not know Velikovsky. Well, I know personally differently, because I was very good friends with Warner Sizemore, a personal friend, not just a scientific associate or professional associate. But Warner Sizemore was the personal secretary of Velikovsky in Princeton. He went with Velikovsky. He was a neighbor. He was in his home a lot. And Albert Einstein would come over for supper. They talked. They talked about Velikovsky's work. Albert Einstein, when he died, had Velikovsky's book, Worlds and Collisions, open on the top of his desk, because he was trying to understand the electromagnetic component of the universe, which he never got to understand. He died, in the 50s, and was not able to, before the space program, etc., before we knew about solar wind or a lot of these issues, Einstein passed away. But he very much was a compatriot, was an associate, had long, serious discussions with Velikovsky about Velikovsky's findings. So Albert Einstein and Emmanuel Velikovsky were very good friends. They personally knew each other. They came from the same part of through Europe, Velikovsky from Russia and Einstein from Germany. But they met and they lived and shared a lot of time together in Princeton, where they were both living. And so that's one thing I want to clarify here. And also, and that I'm putting that in my own history because this is something that you can take to the bank because I know about it personally. It's not like I read it on the internet or read somebody else's book or something. It's because I know about it personally. Stephen Hawking, now let me explain here. My book, The Diamond Principle, came out, and I released it on the Coast to Coast AM radio show, like I did with all my prior books. There are five books that I had released on Coast to Coast AM, and George Norrie was the host for all of those. And so anyway, The Diamond Principle comes along, and I get on the show, and that's going to release this book, and they have a guest, a co-guest. And wait a minute, what? A co-guest, and this guy was trying to talk down my concepts here and trying to promote NASA as NASA's program to send a single man to the moon in 20 years was a great program. And I'm saying no, because my book, The Diamond Principle, talks about sending thousands of people into space in space stations to preserve the human race. And of course, the outer space is believed to be the private playground of the very rich, of the bankers, and of the CIA, and they don't want you there. I'll tell you that right now. So the shuttle accident where you had seven astronauts die, the space shuttle Challenger, the very first one, I want to talk about that for a minute. Because imagine, remember they had the teacher in space contest, and I think it was, what was her name? Christy McCullough was the teacher who won the teacher in space. So it's a woman, and you kind of guessed that it was going to be a woman. And so anyway, this went through this whole national program where the students nominated the teachers and wrote out letters of recommendation and why that their teacher should be the first teacher in space with the NASA program, the teacher in space program. And so McCullough wins this thing and becomes the first woman astronaut to be in space. So every kid in the country that morning was watching the space shuttle Challenger go off and blow up with their teacher being blown up in front of the entire nation of kids. And what is the message that sends to every kid in the country? Space is dangerous. You can't go there. Only NASA can do it. And then the whole space shuttle program is shut down for years while there's an investigation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what is the message that sent? Do you think that was a planned event? There are indications that none of those astronauts really died on that. There's no evidence that people really died. Were those astronauts there for sure? Was that an accident? There are so many questions, and these questions never reach the public. And if they did die, there are just so many questions involving this. But be that as it may, conspiracy theories aside, if you want to call them that, the end result was that every student in the United States looked at that personally, watched the horror of this spacecraft blowing up and all of these astronauts dying, and what message did it send to those kids? Space is dangerous. You can't go there. It's only for NASA. It's only for a few people, and it takes an entire generation out of the loop of going into space, when that should have been the generation that should have been going into space as kids, as thousands of kids going into space at the same time. And so you can see this, that the entire purpose of NASA Now they're involved in space programs where they want to go to Mars in the year 2035. You know, that's so far away, most kids are going to have their families and be retired before that comes along. And so there's no hope of, through the NASA programs, of people going into space. All of these space resources are being destroyed. And so anyway, back to my story of being on Coast to Coast AM, releasing my book, The Diamond Principle, which talks about getting millions of people into outer space in space stations, learning how to live in space in large group, and preserving the DNA of the human race, etc. And so what do? Is they put a guy on there with me who wants to rah-rah NASA, everything good about NASA. And it shocked me because it's not something really you should do, is have a surprise guest on a show. But the point I want to make is that the week before the release of my book, this co-author of Stephen Hawking's came out with a book basically claiming that Stephen Hawking was an atheist, that he did not believe in God, that there's no grand design to the universe, and pushing that entire completely the opposite of my book, The Diamond Principle, which talks about the creator, the advancement of the human race, the probability of life in the universe, and on and on and on. So at any rate, very important to understand the serious level of deflection that goes on in trying to keep the public at bay. Now, this is not new. This has been going on for hundreds of years. And back in the Middle Ages, the Catholic Church preached the flat earth concept, that the earth was flat, and that if you went out on the ocean, there were fire-breathing dragons and tremendous storms and a waterfall, and you would just fall over and fall into nothingness, and so there's no point in going out on that ocean. And it was a mental condition that was put on the people when the Vatican and the people who basically the Vatican controlled all the governments in the known world at the time, including the emerging economy of China. And so the English, etc., were controlling the world through the Navy, etc., but the flat earth doctrine was being promoted to the public so that they would not go out and venture out of their little mental cages. And remember that when Columbus came across the ocean, they were involved in a big storm. It must have been like a hurricane or a pretty big storm. And his sailors were going, "We got to go back. We're hitting the edge." This is what they were all had in their mind, because that's what they were taught from the time they were little. And Columbus goes, "No, we're going forward." And so anyway, they discover the New World. And so then that starts the whole, immediately the ships start coming across the Atlantic to the New World, and the rest is history. But the church taught the flat earth doctrine to keep people mentally at bay, and that's what's going on today with outer space. With the NASA program to send a few people to Mars in 20 years, it's a big charade to keep you from going into space, to use up all of the space resources, and to give a public show, you know, the rocket going off with the big plume of smoke. It's not the way to go into outer space at all. But anyway, it's important to understand the mentality, and of course, this is raging in the middle of the early 2000s. I wanted to mention a release of my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection. When I released that book, I released it again on Coast to Coast AM, and the host, George Norrie, was the only person who had seen that book prior to the announcement, and it had been pre-ordered by thousands of people. Because I was able to sell my books. Everybody was expecting another Planet X book. And so they were, McCanny's writing another book. It must be about Planet X, etc. And so anyway, I put it up for pre-sale without publishing the title. So it sold pretty good. But when George Norrie announced the title, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, and read the text on the front of the book, talked about secret societies and the you know, the history of Atlantis and the connection with Tesla and the, you know, et cetera. The book went crazy. It sold $42,000 in one night. And my merchant account only had a limit of $5,000 at the time. Because, I mean, I would sell books, but I would never come close to my $5,000 a month limit. This in one night sells $42,000 worth of books. As it was a topic that just literally went wild. It was like something for everybody there. It hit on all the major topics. This friend of mine told me, said that I created more employment with that book than any other book in history. Because everybody came out about secret societies and Atlantis and Tesla and on and on and on after that. So at any rate, I had to print all the books. My merchant account would not give me the money until I could prove that all these people had ordered a book and that they had received the book. So I had to print all of these books, mail them out, and then send back information showing that the books had all been delivered to the people that purchased them, because they thought it was some kind of a scam that I had, you know, had this minor amount of sales, and all of a sudden $5,000 is my limit, and I sell $42,000 worth of books. Well, that was back in the good old days. Books don't do that anymore, unfortunately. But, yeah, that book had something for everybody, and it was not a big book. It was not a book that was, 500 pages. It's a very small book. And I want to talk briefly about the photo on the cover of the Atlantis to Tesla book. It's a picture of the sun from the SOHO satellite, the close-up view. And there are two comets that come in, and there's the sun already has a ray coming out from it. It's like a solar flare. And these comets come right through that flare and cause, you can see the discharge. I mean, you can see the discharge snap off to the sun, and then out comes this, what they called the biggest solar flare ever recorded in history up to that time. And so clearly the comets did it, and it's almost like somebody sent them there to, because they were only picked up at the time on the SOHO camera when they were close to the sun. But there's no question that they interacted with that solar flare and discharged the sun and caused this immense solar flare. The first one missed by a little, and the second one went right smack dead set through the center of that flare. And boom, caused this massive solar flare, and that's the cover photo of my book, Atlantis to Tesla. So it was a book that was totally unexpected. Because everybody thought I was going to do another Planet X book. I already had my book, Planet X, Comets and Earth Changes, which would have been a New York Times bestseller, but I don't get involved in that baloney about, you know, selling it through bookstores, etc. And the next follow-on was the short pamphlet. It's called Surviving Planet X Passage. And it's a short pamphlet with questions and answers and a lot of details that was a supplement to the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book. And, of course, the whole point of that was to discuss the issues of big comets, primarily big comets, coming through the solar system and what would be their effect. So then the next book was the Atlantis to Tesla book. And the next book was the weather book. Now, the weather book was originally 600 pages because I had all of this data, all of this information, and I said, this is too big, I can't publish this, I can't afford to publish it, nobody's going to buy it because I'm going to have to charge too much, and it's too much scientific data. So I went through, and it took me, it was very painful for people that knew me at the time, extremely painful, because I was just, you know, in this book and working on it, editing it, and reducing it from 600 pages down to 300 pages, its current form. And I finally got that done, got it published, got it out, etc. And so that is a major contribution. And when I write my books, They're written for all time. They're not written for that week or that month or even that year. They are written so that in 100 or 200 years, people will still read them as the primary source of information on how to get started in understanding the electrical nature of the solar system and universe. And the weather book is packed. I mean, it's a very important book. It covers all the planets, the weather systems of the planets. It has the center section, which is a series of photographs of Mars. The complete surface of Mars is in a series, the center. It's kind of like the center piece of the book. 8 pages of high-quality printing and of the entire surface of Mars, showing that Mars had water recently. Okay, so the weather book, very important book, with just a complete new understanding of weather, of how it works, what causes it, all of the local electrical batteries that form around Earth, which are plasma batteries, on and on. Okay, and so that couples with the books, and you'll see that every one of my books is another direction, like a 90-degree direction, but builds on my previous books. And then the next book is the Calculate Primes book. So this actually was published in 2007, and once again, I sent it to Coast AM, and nobody else had seen it. So this had been pre-sold on a large scale worldwide, so thousands of copies had already been sent out, and nobody knew what the title was. So everybody's expecting like an Alanis to Tesla or a weather book or science of the universe type of thing. And I come out with the Calculate Primes book, which breaks the RSA codes, which have been used for encryption. And of course, encryption is one of my professional specialties. It's something I worked in most of my life in the telecommunications industry. And so, and even at the time, I'm working at the in the telecommunications industry. But when I published that book, I realized the actual danger that I would be in by releasing this information. So I went to a foreign location and was on an island. I set up specific communications so I could do that radio show, but I would not be able to be found. And I could still receive phone information, etc., and communications. But it wasn't like anybody was going to find me soon. And the problem was with that book is that it was going to cause a lot of damage to the computer industry, but it was necessary because the encryption codes were broken. And the encryption codes were RSA or what they call public key encryption codes, and based on prime numbers. What they do is they take a big number that has two prime factors. So that's the only factoring available for that number. And then they build an encryption system around this. And it's supposed to be impregnable, that you cannot break the code. But what I did is I set up by allowing very easily to calculate prime numbers and do it mathematically through an algorithm, so you did not have to go through this laborious division process of trying to find prime numbers. And not only that, but I found all the prime numbers, not just some, because previously the supercomputers would look at, for example, Mersenne primes or other types of primes that were high probability candidates of being prime numbers, but they wouldn't search for all the prime numbers. Well, my method created all the prime numbers very easily. And so that, I'll talk later about that because we're not quite into the 2007 time frame yet, but I'm just talking about these various books that were released on Coast to Coast and what happened. And interestingly enough, I get a call right after the show ended, and I'm in a hotel basically, and nobody is around because it's the middle of the night. I'm in a hotel, and down in the lobby, it's an oceanfront motel, so I'm there watching the ocean. I get a phone call. I get a call from the woman I talked about last week, who was the agent that they sent out to compromise me at the UFO Congress. She calls me up on the phone, and she's driving in a car, and she said, "I just heard you on the radio show. I just wanted to tell you how great a job you did." Anyway, that was real interesting. Let's just put it that way. I'm going to jump back to the weather book. That's what I call it, the short name, but it's actually Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun-Earth Weather. And it's, these are written for the general public. That might be kind of a defying name, but these are written for the general public and also for professionals, so scientists, etc., who want to understand my work and how it completely blows away the entire entourage of ridiculous theories for weather that have been brought to you by the meteorological community. They don't add up. They don't make any sense at all. But in that book, in the weather book, I also take the example, the specific example of what would happen if a large planet, comet came by Earth and did some damage. What would be the result? What would happen after that? What would be the timeline of the recovery of the human race, of glaciers, etc.? And basically in doing that, what I prove is that right now we're coming out of an ice age, which we are. The glaciers are melting. They're talking about the glaciers in the Scandinavian glaciers still melting. When I was a kid, the big western glaciers in Wyoming and Montana were still there. Those have all melted within my lifetime. So the Earth is warming up, but it was not due to you driving your SUV up and down the road and CO2. The global warming is happening because Earth is getting back to normal after an ice age. And why did it go into an ice age? Well, the Earth just doesn't do this by itself, all by itself. The reason we were in an ice age is after the Venus event, we had the sun blocked for a good period of time. And the people that survived in China, in India, in the Hindu Kush, in the certain regions of Europe, Greece, etc., those people that lived through that and developed societies coming out of the Venus event. But during that time, the Earth was blanketed with water and it came in the form of ice because the solar energy had been blocked by the comet tail. So we are coming out of that ice age, and the weather book discusses this. I'm running out of time for this week's show. Just to remind you, this commercial-free show is brought to you by my water filter line, the JMCC Water Filters line of excellent water filtration products. And you can get a 10% discount using the coupon code JMCC or any other coupon codes if you're looking at this online on a podcast or elsewhere. Use the coupon code that's listed in that location. Once again, the webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com, or my main webpage, jmccsci.com, that has all the archives of these radio shows going back 20 years. Once again, this is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.